stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, we'll tell you about the new research being done on GLP-1's impact on long COVID. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Last week, scientists at Scripps Research launched a new treatment trial looking to address long COVID. Known as Locket, the trial will be entirely remote and test how an FDA-approved drug could provide relief for symptoms. Dr. Eric Topol, Executive Vice President at Scripps Research Translational Institute, is here to talk about the trial and the state of long COVID research today. Dr. Topol, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me join.
So, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Talk about the drug that is being tested here, tirzepatide. It's also known as Zepbound. What is it most commonly used to treat?
Right. So Zepbound, tirzepatide is a so-called GLP-1 family drug that has been used for weight loss, also for diabetes, type 2 diabetes. But it's been found to have a whole bunch of other advantages in helping the liver, kidney, the heart, and even things like migraine headaches and rheumatoid arthritis and reducing addiction. So it has a varied functions well beyond what was conceived as that for late weight loss.
That's a very interesting. I mean, for those who don't know, how do GLP-1 drugs like tirzepatide work in the body?
Yeah, that's really interesting because we thought they worked on slowing the gastrointestinal tract, delaying stomach emptying. Turns out their main action is working to block inflammation throughout the body and in the brain. And even though they work as a gut hormone, the gut talks to the brain. And so it is really striking. There are receptors for this GLP on immune cells to block inflammation throughout the body. And that's what we're banking on as a potential benefit for all of these people that are suffering long COVID.
Wow. And I know we're talking about a long COVID here, but gosh, those implications are pretty far reaching. Do you see any research being done on things like autoimmune diseases with GLP-1s in the future?
I think that's where we're headed. We've seen these anecdotal reports of people with autoimmune diseases that are getting marked relief and previously couldn't find any drug that was helping them. So it looks that way. The enormity and breadth of the benefits of this class of drugs in many ways is just beginning. That is, we have many more of these hormones of the gut that we can mimic with either injectable drugs like Zepbound or even pills that are coming along. And so there's combinations of them. So this is a really exciting and probably one of the most important drug classes that's ever been discovered.
Wow. It is very fascinating. Is this trial that you're working on seeking to address any particular long COVID symptoms, or are you looking at how people might respond more broadly?
Well, what's striking is since we started the enrollment a week ago, we've already enrolled half of, that is, over 500 people with long COVID. And that's people, of course, who have a medical certification of that diagnosis and significant symptoms that are ongoing, irrespective of when they began during the pandemic. So this trial is moving the fastest I've ever been involved with. It's really extraordinary. That is in part reflective of how many people are out there who are incapacitated or suffering from this condition.
Well, you know, I mean, say the trial is successful. How might that affect accessibility to the drug for people who are suffering from long COVID? I know there recently Donald Trump made an announcement that the cost of GLP-1s would be lowered. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a really important point because these drugs are still pretty darn expensive. They've come down quite a bit from if you had to pay out of pocket over $1,000 a month to now between $400 and $500 a month. But now, as you mentioned, just last week, we're seeing the price potentially get down to around $150. But because of the stiff competition with many more of these drugs and alternatives coming in the times ahead, the price will keep coming down. And when it gets to pills, which achieve a very similar effect, then it will be far less expensive. So the main thing here is to identify a treatment. We don't have any treatments for long COVID that have been shown to be helpful. And if we can get the treatment, we'll work on getting the price down because there's so many millions of people around the U.S. and around the world have really been hit hard and had no relief. And this is our best shot. This is the drug we picked that has the best chance of making a difference. It's not going to work for everyone, but hopefully at least in a subset of people, we'll see some marked improvement.
You know, long COVID, it can present in so many different ways. There are over 200 documented symptoms currently. Can you talk about the continued challenges of diagnosing and treating long COVID today?
Yeah, it's a really important point because we don't have like a simple blood test that would tell us this is the diagnosis. And then if you're treating it, this blood test reflects that we're making some real improvement. So without that type of what we call biomarker, we're relying on patients' symptoms. Mostly, even though there's a list of as long as 200, as you mentioned, most of these are related to profound fatigue, lack of exercise tolerance, brain fog, and pain, whether it's in the chest or in joints, muscles. I mean, the symptoms are pretty common among the group of people that have long COVID. It knocks them out, and so we will know because of the criteria that have been set up to gauge symptomatology in people with long COVID, whether the treatment as compared with placebo, who are, you know, half and half of the people enrolled in the trial, will see how it is affecting their quality of life and their symptoms.
So say someone wants to participate in the trial, do they need to have an official long COVID diagnosis?
Yes, it has to be reflected in their medical chart that they have this diagnosis, they carry this diagnosis, because otherwise, we're putting people in a trial, especially as you mentioned, without the lack of a biomarker or blood test. We've got to be certain that all the people that are enrolling are people who have this condition. People that would go into the trial just to get access to a drug, for example, without the actual diagnosis, that would be a real problem.
And how does one get diagnosed? Is it something that doctors know how are familiar with?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a clinical diagnosis like many things, like there are many conditions that there's not a blood test, like, for example, Parkinson's disease, so many conditions that we diagnose clinically. This is the same. So basically, someone comes in, they've had a definite diagnosis of COVID by rapid test or molecular test, PCR. And then at some point, whether it's with the initial infection or even weeks later, they get profoundly tired. They can't work. They can't function. They might even, have a hard time just getting out of bed or out of a chair. And they have all sorts of other symptoms, as mentioned. So it's a clinical diagnosis. It can affect almost every system in the body. But it's easy once you know the person's got an infection that's bona fide, as well as the symptoms that follow. It is more common in women, which goes along with this immune system being at the root of it. It's also more common in younger people, those who are in their, let's say, 30s, 40s, rather than older folks. So there's a lot of descriptors that we can use to help be more confident about a diagnosis.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, it's been 5 years since the pandemic began, and there's still no relief for people experiencing long COVID, which has really led to this this sense of frustration and desperation among people seeking help. You mentioned earlier that there's been a big response to this. Talk more about that. I mean, are people feeling more hopeful?
Yes. I mean, the response to getting into the trial has been extraordinary. So there's a few reasons for that. One, there's never been a large trial of a potential candidate drug for long COVID. This is a 1,000 person trial. So that's one thing that reflects hope that we're finally getting into the trial that are large enough to detect a benefit, potential benefit. Second, this trial is done all at home. So it's remote. That is, you know, anyone from the United States who qualifies could be in it. So they don't have to go to clinics. They don't have to go through all sorts of hassles, which is really difficult for people with long COVID. So it's a participant-friendly trial, which makes it even all the more appealing. And then thirdly, it's testing what is the most promising drug that we know that knocks out inflammation in the brain and the body that helps to get a person's immune system on track. And so we think that also, you know, has something to do with the remarkable enthusiasm for people to enroll. It's a one-year follow-up, getting the study medication. And hopefully about a year or so from now, we'll know whether it worked.
Hmm. You know, more than 400 million people around the world have been impacted and continue to be impacted by long COVID. What else stands out to you about the state of research and the current government response to COVID today?
The government response is totally inadequate. It doesn't at all measure up with the burden that's profound. The number of people, these are often, as mentioned, typically young people who aren't able to work, who, you know, really become disabled, so many of them. Of course, there's a spectrum, but many of them are at the really hard, suffering end of that spectrum. So we're not putting in resources. The government did do a major grant called Recover of over $1 billion through the NIH for long COVID, but unfortunately, no large trial was initiated throughout the few years that that grant was available. So it's delayed, it's insufficient, and hopefully, you know, we're going to make up for lost time here. That's our effort. Whatever we get out of this trial, it will only be the first of trials we hope to move forward with because there are so many other potential candidate drugs, interventions to help these people. And we're also indebted. We've relied on philanthropy to be able to fund this trial, the Schmidt Initiative for Long COVID that's from Wendy and Eric Schmidt, and also Lilly, to be able to supply what is a very expensive drug and placebo, which they're not funding the trial, but they are at least supplying the drug. So it's been hard to pull those together, but we all think, of course, it's a worthwhile initiative, and hopefully it's going to make a difference.
Where can people learn more about the trial if they're interested in participating?
There's a website and at scripps.edu. You can find the long COVID trial. And so that would be a way, if someone wants to enroll, to get right into the requirements and actual participation.
All right. And of course, we will have a link to that on our website, as well as any information about donating for this cause as well. I've been speaking with Dr. Eric Topol, Executive Vice President at the Scripps Research Translational Institute. Dr. Topol, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're voices of IA. Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a team-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.